Welcome to the Botcast, featuring Nigel Bottrell. The Botcast is an Entrepreneur's Circle production, exclusively for EC members.
Hey, hi, good afternoon, good morning, even good evening if you're listening to us late at night on the Botcast. This is June, it's busting out all over. And Nigel here, and I have with me today a long-standing EC member, low-profile guy, not someone known for... flashing it around. You may have seen him around, but you may not have noticed him. His name is Alan Rawlings. Alan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Nigel.
And I see you're in a very smart suit today.
This is the business attire.
Well, we appreciate you making an effort for the podcast. I think it's important to keep to maintain standards. And Alan, you're in property.
Yes, but not the sort that most people think when someone says they're in property. They think either an estate agent or somebody who deals with buy-to-lets. Don't do that.
Okay.
I do something completely different.
What do you do?
I deal with commercial property.
Okay.
Primarily. So owners, occupiers. They're my client base.
So owners and occupiers of commercial property.
Yeah.
So the sorts of premises that business owners, members of the EC, for instance,
shops,
would be
offices, industrial premises.
Oh, right. Okay.
As an idea, that's
now,
the
now let's in the interest of full disclosure, and I had the idea for this particular broadcast following a particularly eventful and interesting Inner Circle meeting that you were part of a few weeks ago.
Safe to say.
Yeah, and that one of the other members of that particular group was having some challenges with their particular property, and it got very, very interesting conversation. And I thought that would be really interesting on the podcast. So we've arranged to do it today, and we're recording this immediately after the Gerald Ratner Masterclass. So we've just experienced today, you and I, the Gerald Ratner Masterclass. How was that for you?
Well, that was really interesting because I grew up in a time where the Gerald Ratner story was always there in the background. But getting it straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak,
yeah,
it was very interesting with taking out all of the tabloid approach to the story and hearing what was real and what wasn't.
Because obviously a big part of Ratner's story was of course his expansion into all the shops, of course, which I guess is commercial property.
Yeah, I mean, he took it from a very small family business and took it up to over 1,000 stores in the UK and also overseas as well. And he wasn't at that time during the 80s and 90s and early 90s. A lot of businesses were doing that as well, and our high streets were all taken up by the likes of all the jewellery stores that Ratner's were responsible for, but also the likes of Dixon's and Boots and all the other big retailers, and they all had huge numbers of stores. Every town high street you went into,
yeah,
they looked the same. The British Shoe Corporation was to shoes what Ratner's was to jewellery.
Yes, yeah.
They had loads of different brands across the high street, and a lot of these have disappeared now. And the retail marketplace has evolved beyond description from what it was 5 years ago, even before the last recession. But when you're talking about sort of in the 80s and 90s, it's a completely different world. The demands that retailers wanted then, the space that people wanted then,
yes,
is different to what people want
now. Yeah.
And the whole thing has evolved.
Well, I guess the same is true of many kind of markets, isn't it? If you look at the tech sector or motor cars, everything is vastly different to what it was 20
people
years ago.
People understand that because those things are intangibles. Property, you think, well, it's a building, it can't change, it doesn't move, it doesn't evolve. Well, it does, but in a different manner, a different way.
So let's we might explore that a little bit in a moment or two, but first I want to understand then, really, I want to try and recapture, if we can, the kind of key elements of those conversations that you and I had with the rest of the Inner Circle group a little while ago, because it's quite a big thing as a business owner. It's quite a big milestone in the development of any business when you kind of many businesses start from home or from the back of a van or whatever.
Yeah.
And at some point, as the business develops and grows, the business owner makes the decision that actually we need a proper place. Either that's an office, as you say, or it's a shop, or it might be a warehouse, or whatever. But there's some property comes into the mix.
At some point,
I can't think of any businesses that get to sort of seven figures and do £1 million or more that haven't got some premises somewhere.
It's encouraging, really, because you hear about all the high-profile businesses that merge or go out of business over time. For all of those that go out of business, there's 10 more that start up. and they might start as one man band with a market stall and go into a rented unit in a serviced office accommodation, or then they move on to getting their own little shop in a small mall of some description, going to a shopping mall, going to the high street.
Yes.
And it's a gradual process as building up. And then once you've got a model that works in one way, well, you can replicate that. And you can replicate that. And that's similar to what a lot of the high street brands that we know that are still around and that have passed now. And what Gerald Ratner was saying today about having a model that worked and then replicating that and keep replicating
it. And so let's go back and make this real from our kind of EC members, people listening to this broadcast now. And some will have a property, and I know you have acted, because you act for quite a number of EC members who are either purchasing commercial property, or more often they are leasing it.
It's dealing through the whole cycle. A lot of people that may have... This is where the difference between commercial property and the residential market is completely different. A lot of people listening to this will probably have bought their own home or rented a property, or they understand how they can live somewhere, how the residential market probably works, even if they might not have really grasped all the elements of it. The commercial market is governed by some pretty strict legislation, and it's been around for a long, long time, and it is completely different in the way it works to the residential side of things. But a lot of people who go into it, who get a shop, they might know a little bit, they don't know much. And the old adage, a little knowledge is dangerous, and they can think they're getting a good deal, and they're actually not over the term of the lease. And that is a big problem for a lot of small businesses, because they don't really get... They either don't know the right advice is there, or they get the wrong advice.
So let's talk about a real situation. Okay. Let's make this real and tangible. Okay. So give me an example then of what you mean in this scenario.
Somebody who is looking for a shop. Right. They might have been in a serviced building somewhere, either an office or a warehouse, where they just pay a monthly rent.
Yes.
All-inclusive rent, rent service.
Yeah, yeah. No.
They want to expand, and they want to have a high street retail shop unit, for example. Well, that high street retail shop unit will be let to them if the landlord will let it to them, and that's a different, longer story.
Yes, I can talk about that. We tried to get a big property when we moved into our current offices, and we went to look to take a lease on something that was quite a bit bigger. And they wouldn't look at us because
I didn't think you could pay the rent. Probably.
Well, the size of our balance sheet, basically. Yep.
And that is a big problem. A lot of the time, when it's new business, three times your provable profit. If you haven't got more than that on the balance sheet of the last 3 years, they'll want a rent deposit as a barest minimum. And that's varying. If it's a small unit or a big unit, the same rules apply. It's really protecting the landlord. The whole point of the landlord letting you something in these circumstances is you're expected to look after it in its full entirety. It's all your problem. If something goes wrong, it's your fault.
I know from talking to other EC members who've there's one member in particular who's just moved, similar situation to what you just described. He's got his own warehouse now. It's quite a big thing for him, and it's been a real eye-opener for him, for instance, and he's starting to understand some of these things that he was starting to get asked for that he was being protected from. And that's why I think this is going to be such an interesting podcast for people. So you talk about landlords requiring rent deposits in some instances.
Yeah, I mean, they will have a rent deposit as a protection for the landlord, but quite often you would expect it to take a lease for a term of years to pay the rent.
Yes.
You're fully responsible for the repair and upkeep of the premises.
And that was the thing that shook him, because that literally is. It's not like when you are a domestic tenant. If you rent a flat or a house, then the landlord is the one that is responsible.
Exactly.
Whereas actually when it's a commercial property,
it's your fault.
The responsibility is all on the business.
Absolutely.
And typically, again, I know from my own experience, we moved into, because I owned the properties that we had originally, I bought them, and now our offices, we rent them. No one had to sell them to me, I had to rent. And we've got in there, and we have to obviously look after everything, and also when I leave, I have to put it back to exactly how it was when I came in. And of course, when I came in, it had all been freshly painted.
This is one of the other major problems that a lot of people don't realise when they take a commercial premises, is that the landlord is represented by an agent.
Typically by an agent.
They might be a really nice guy, but you've got to remember who's paying them.
Yes.
The guy you're taking a property from.
Yes.
So they're only going to tell you something They won't lie.
No, no, yeah.
But they might embellish the truth a little bit to get the deal done.
Okay.
It's not... it's just a general process of doing business.
Yes.
You know, if you ask the question, they'll tell you the answer, but they might not volunteer it.
Yes, I understand.
They'll expect you to understand what's going on because yes. It's a business arrangement between two advised parties. That's how the market perceives it.
Yes.
So I would always say to anybody who's looking to take any commercial promises at all is have a good agent.
Yes.
Have a good commercial conveyancing solicitor.
Yes.
Not your general practitioner, not the chap you know that does everything, the guy who does this day in, day out.
On commercial
premises.
Because
of the lease situation.
Yeah, and again, I can echo this from my own circumstance, because I was advised when we went looking for properties when we were moving, and someone said, you need to get an agent to represent you. And I thought, I don't need an agent, I can have these conversations.
Yeah.
And then I spoke to a friend of mine, actually, who is in a very different part of the business, but is in property. And he said, Nigel, you've got to get yourself an agent. And I said, well, and he explained it to me, much as you're doing now, and introduced me to somebody. And I'm so glad that I had that agent acting on my behalf.
I think what puts people off as well is, I think, well, that's going to cost me, I'm looking at a rent that's like £1,000 a month, for argument's sake, on a small shop in a tertiary location.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, if I have a small shop in a tertiary location, that's a price point you find a lot of these little district centres are and things like that.
Yes.
People can get their head around that.
Yeah.
The nail bars, the hairdresser, all these sort of things. But then think, well, I'm going to cost me a few £1,000 for an agent, a few £1,000 for a solicitor. I can't afford to do that.
Yeah.
I would say you can't afford not to do that, because the problem is you're not going to know what's going to go wrong until it goes wrong.
Yeah.
And when it goes wrong, it'll cost you a lot more than you could ever perceive.
What sort of things could go wrong?
In a commercial lease, two of the biggest issues are reinstatement, as Nigel's already mentioned, which means...
Is that the same as dilapidations?
It all comes under the same sort of barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Effectively, what it means is when you go in there, you take the premises as seen.
Yes.
When you give it back to the landlord, unless you lease is worded in such a way that it protects you from this, you give it back to them as if it's in a new condition, effectively.
Yes.
Which is bonkers.
Yeah.
But that's the way the basis of the law is.
And what happened when we took our property, there was, and again, this is an additional cost, I had to pay someone £1,500, but they came and took a photographic record of everything.
Photographic schedule of conditions, that's one way of protecting
and
yourself.
So I've got to put it back to how that photographic...
No better, no worse.
That's right,
And that is attached to the lease and becomes part of your contract.
Exactly, yeah.
A lot of landlords don't like that because it limits their ability to go after you for dilapidations at the end of the lease. What I would say is...
Although in our case, because the property had been... It wasn't a new property, but it had been nicely done up and everything, so in truth it was pretty pucker. Okay.
The case law, which is what governs a lot of English law around dilapidations, is quite vast. And there are cases where landlords have gone after tenants for large sums of money for dilapidations and have lost heavily in courts. But again, it's the cost of going through that legal process, and you want to avoid that.
This
is why I say coming and having the right advisors and having the right solicitor to deal with it in the first place, because they will know the type of property you're dealing with.
Yes.
They will know the downfalls of
not
having
documented things, and these things that you're talking about, this can happen, as you say, on £1,000 a month.
Absolutely.
Shop or even a small modest office unit.
Absolutely.
A couple of thousand square feet and things. Yeah. This is not about big super office complexes or supermarket premises. This is actually day-to-day property that people listening to this are.
Well, this is the thing that the property law that deals with commercial premises is the same for a small 200 square foot kiosk, and it is for 50 or 100,000 square foot food store.
Right. Okay.
The principles of the law are the same.
Yes.
It's just there's more noughts involved.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
The legislation, it dates back in, the main piece of legislation is over 60 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it has evolved over time as cases have come through the courts and the Court of Appeal, and it has evolved, and it is very complicated. It's much more complicated in England and Wales than it is in Scotland and Northern Ireland. The legislation is different.
Right, okay.
We won't go into that because it is much more complicated. But what we're really talking about here within England and Wales.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you anybody considering entering into a commercial lease contract,
yes,
really should take proper advice.
Yeah, and because well, another thing, let's look at the lease, because you saw it's £1,000 a month.
But even
on that case there, on a 5-year lease, that's a £60,000 liability, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, a good example I gave to a chap who was looking at taking a restaurant unit,
mm-hmm.
and I asked the question, I said, how much is it going to cost you? And he said, oh, it's £50,000 a year. I said, okay, and how long's the lease for? He said, 10 years. It's okay. And it's where? Oh, it's in this complex. Oh, okay. So that's £500,000 in rent. You've got a service charge, which you'd pay because it's part of the complex. So that's probably another £250,000. Or when your rate's on top. So when you sign that lease, your obligation, your liability is £1,000,000.
Yeah.
And he just stood there and looked at me and thought, oh, I hadn't really thought about it like that.
Yeah.
And this is the problem, because, and you see a lot of businesses who take premises,
yes.
especially restaurateurs, yeah. who are, they're very good at doing the business.
Yes.
They've got the staff to do the business.
Was, I mean, the EC member, and I don't want to name who it is, but he was gobsmacked when because he was going from a serviced office where he paid this all-inclusive mm-hmm. sum, and he was going into this new premises where the rent he thought was quite expensive, but he completely discounted business rates. It that came as a bit of a shock to him, and he is on a complex where there is a, it's actually a fairly modest service charge, but those elements when they are, do change the whole perspective, the whole landscape is shifted. Now, it doesn't mean it's the wrong thing for him to do,
no, but you need to know
that's the
full cost and the full implications of what you're buying into.
Yes.
If you know it's going to cost you that,
that's
and you
right.
can budget for it,
yes,
it's not, it doesn't come as a surprise.
Yes.
But the problem is when a lot of creative people who go into taking a premises, whatever, however size it is, they're very good at doing what they do. They know all their business. They're very good at delivering them. That's what they do. Their staff are there to help them. They do
yes.
that. The property is a side thought. They might, oh, well, I've got that. Oh, thank God I've got that. Right, put
yes.
that away. But it goes away in the file. But it might be a 10-year lease, and they don't do anything with it. They just yeah. It just sits there until they yeah. get a letter from their landlord to say, yeah. oh, we've got a rent review to deal with.
Mm.
Or you've got leases need renewing. And all these things, really, it's a after the actual model of the business you do
yes.
and your staff, it's the biggest cost you
yes.
have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you review those other costs on a regular monthly or annual basis.
Yes.
So why would your lease be any different?
Yeah.
It should be part of your annual business plan.
Yeah.
And look at it. And does it still do what I got it to do
yeah.
a year ago or 2 years ago? If
yeah.
it doesn't, well, okay, perhaps you've still got time to run on the lease, but you can look at it and think, okay, well, I need to change this. I need to upsize, downsize. I need to move, or what? If you address it, you can look at the lease and say, well, okay, what can we do here?
Mm-hmm.
And that comes back to, again, getting the right advice when you come into the lease.
Yes.
Because then you might have options to assign it to somebody else.
Yeah.
You might be able to sell the lease on to somebody else.
Yes.
Do a deal with the landlord to return.
Is that normal?
Oh, it happens a lot.
Yeah.
It happens a lot. There's five points in a cycle of taking a rented property or
okay.
commercial property. You know, when you first go, you're looking to acquire something. Once you've got the thing, you need to manage it. Otherwise,
yes.
that nice asset
yes.
you've got
yeah,
turns
yeah.
into a liability.
Yes.
Because you're not looked after it, the repairs, things like
yes.
that. If it's a reasonable term of lease, you've probably got a rent review in there.
Yes.
Usually in the mid-terms of a 10-year lease, at the end of year five, you'll have a rent review, which is done to market rents.
Yes.
Now, if the rents have gone down, your rent's not going to go down. But if the market rents in the area have gone up, your rent's going to go up.
Yeah, again, that's important, because rent reviews are almost always one way.
Oh, they will be. They won't be up or down. They will be upwards only.
Yeah.
So it'll either stay as it is or go up.
Yeah.
You've then got, at some point during the cycle, as I mentioned, you might think, oh, this just does not do what I've got it to do. It doesn't work, or
yeah.
it's too small, too big, or whatever. It's not right for the
yes.
business. So you've got two choices. Do you mumble on to the end of the lease, and hopefully the business doesn't go out of business?
Yep.
Or do you think, okay, I need to address this?
Yeah.
That's the next stage of the 5 points that I'm thinking about, is you either looking at re-gearing or getting rid of what you've got and moving on to somewhere else. And then the last point of it is, when you're coming towards the end of the lease, you've got to think about what you're going to do at the end of it, what you're going to do then. Are you going to let the lease expire, move somewhere else? Are you going to look to renew your lease?
Yeah.
Is the business going really well? So, yeah, I want to stay here.
Yes.
Have you got a right to renew the lease?
I'm going to say that all things like that are quite important.
And
as well,
again, if you think of it beforehand, you can
yes.
plan it.
Yeah.
If you do what most people do and leave it too late,
yes.
you're then on the back foot and you have to be reactive.
And that,
and then you get a poorer deal than you would do.
And
if
that
you
again
react.
Is where a good agent acting on
exactly.
behalf of the tenant
yep.
kind of comes in. And I know, you know, our again, it might be because I was a bit naive, really. But you know, when we took our property, my agent, acting on my behalf, negotiated a fairly chunky rent-free period. Mm-hmm. I think I know what it was. We negotiated. We took a 10-year lease.
Yeah.
With a 5-year break, which is, so we could, that means we can leave after 5 years if we want
talk
to
talk about breaks in a minute.
Okay, we'll come to that in a minute. Yeah, that's what I think it makes. And the 12 months, the 1 year free rental is kind of payable by 2 years at half rent.
Yeah,
that makes sense. So that was now that which saves me quite a lot of money. And actually, as he was able to point out, my friend who'd recommended pointed out to me that you've got a better deal than you would have if you hadn't had an agent, and the deal you've got has been way more than covered. Yeah. By what the agent cost you, so you've already done the right thing. Yeah. And you've now got a lease that works for you, and you've had someone in your corner.
Yeah, that's a fair assumption.
That was how it was kind of. Yeah. Now, what about this break then? Should I be worried about this break?
Break option, I mentioned with the case law, and dilapidations is one area.
Mm-hmm.
The other area is break options. Break options are explicitly stated in a lease. And what that means is, if it says it in the lease, that's what happens. If you vary from that or by a letter and you don't comply with the conditions within the lease, you can't exercise the break.
So give me an example. What do you mean there?
A lot of leases aren't, when I was actually for a national retailer, we used to take leases with breaks in which stated specifically in there they were totally unconditional. So what that meant was that you get to the date in the lease you could exercise the break, you serve the notice on the landlord, you can walk away. The landlord could sue you to high heavens if you were in breach or for anything else, but that didn't prevent you from breaking the lease. However, most landlords won't allow you to do that now. The minimum you'll get away with is having to have paid the rents, and
yes,
that's rent, service charge, and insurance. Yes. Rent usually.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have to remember with a commercial lease that rent is payable even if it's not demanded. You've signed a contract that says you're going to pay rent every quarter or every month. You pay that. If you don't, you're in breach of your lease. Landlord doesn't have to serve you an invoice every quarter or every month for that rent to be due. And a lot of people have come unstuck in the past, and the courts have supported this, where the argument from the tenant was, well, I've exercised my break. The landlord would say, well, you've not paid your rent. He said, well, you haven't demanded it. You don't have to. The law says he doesn't have to demand the rent. So that's where some people come unstuck. Others, there are little clauses in there. For example, you have to have complied with all your lease covenants.
Okay.
If your lease says that, the chance of you exercising your break are drastically reduced, and that I would say to virtually nil, because they will always find something you haven't done you should have done under the terms of your lease. So,
like what?
Well,
what could it possibly be?
Okay, well, if it's dilapidations, for example, if by the break date you have got to comply with all your covenants in the lease, which means dilapidations, how are you going to have put it back into the exact condition
if you're still,
the lease is, if you're either still in there or you'll come out there? And there was a case a few years ago where somebody left a couple of bags of rubbish in there. Sorry, can't exercise the break. It's very, very prescriptive. If it says it in there, if you've done it, you can go. If you haven't done it, you can't. And that's where a lot of people get unstuck. And I know from commercial lawyers that I deal with, they don't like any conditions on break clauses because of that point, from a tenant's perspective, because people will get unstuck. I mean, if you think about it, you've taken this lease, you don't really know what you're doing it on a regular basis, you just have the one site. You put your lease away and forget about it.
Yes, which is what happens. So that's what we all do, isn't it?
That's what most people do.
Yeah.
They think about the break probably just before the date when they can exercise it. Oh, I'll do that. Right, exercise the break. Then they think, oh, I've got 6 months to get out. Then they forget about it again until a week before they're due to get out. Try to get out. Don't do something they should have done in the lease. Can't exercise their break. Stuck in there for another 5 years. Business goes under. It sounds drastic, but it happens.
Wowee. Okay, so, and this really, and because of all these things, this is why people like you exist.
To a greater extent, yeah. I mean, my background, as I say before, I've worked for a couple of national retailers in the past, and I was in private practice in London for a number of years, and I was acting for landlords and tenants, which is a good balance, because you do find some people just do tenant work and some just do landlord work. which doesn't mean they're any worse or any better than anybody else, but they just understand the market from that angle.
Right.
Well, I try to look at it from the round. So I still act for landlords and for tenants.
Yeah.
And it gives a good understanding of the way the market works in a certain location. And you can understand the arguments that will come up from a landlord or from a tenant's perspective to try and even those out to get a better deal for both that works for both parties. The old adage with rent reviews is that it's always an argument whether because the landlord wants the rent to go up as high as possible, and the tenant doesn't want it to go up at all.
Yes,
and sometimes you reach agreement. Probably half of the time you end up going to arbitration, or an independent expert, which is more cost, but it's a set process which is documented in the lease on how to settle the rent.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And some quite senior heads that have been around the market longer than I have, who act as arbitrators, and always said to me, "This it is stuck." Was that, well, if I do an arbitration for on a rent review on a shop or a supermarket or anything else, if I get a figure which probably upsets both sides in equal measure, I've probably got it about right.
Right. It's a funny old industry, yours, isn't it?
It's archaic in some respects, trying to deal with a modern way of, modern process. And you can see with some of the high street retailers that are still around, like Next and Yours and people like that, that have got a very strong online presence.
Yes.
And their business themselves has evolved.
Yes.
And they've probably been the best ones to grasp the clicks and bricks idea.
Yes.
Along with Argos as well. Where they, when they first took a store, they might have had, for argument's sake, a 2,000 square foot store. Half of that will be retail space for the public. Half of it was storage.
Storage, yeah.
When they improved their systems over the intervening years, the stock came in the back door, straight through the storeroom, straight onto the shop floor on a daily basis.
Yes.
So the stockrooms weren't used.
Yeah.
So they ate up some more of that stockroom space to use as retail space.
Yes.
And what's happening now is that with the click and collect process, because again, you don't pay delivery on
Click
and collect,
people
are ordering three or four of the same item, going into the shop, trying it on. Oh, I'll have this one, right? This one fits. I'll take a couple of other items and going away again, leaving the store with three or four times more stock than they really have got anything to do with.
Yeah.
And some retail managers that I've spoken to, especially ones in shopping centres on walkthroughs to stations, commuter stations, who are very, very busy in the mornings and the evening with people coming to and from work, are inundated with click and collect orders. And they do more through that on people picking stuff up and sending stuff back or putting stock on the shop floor and selling extra bits than actually sell through the shop from the tills.
Interesting.
And coming back on to where we were today, listening to what
to Gerald.
Gerald Ratner was saying about how the Americans do their leases are completely different to the UK. Over here, you pay generally what's called a market rent, and that's based on what somebody else has paid in the same street and same location.
So yes.
If they've paid a rent which works out at £50 a foot, and they expect you to pay the same.
Yes.
And it's worked on that basis, which is fine until you've got markets like coffee shops or mobile phone shops who will pay anything to get a location. And that ramps the rents up. No good for anybody. Now, we try to do, in this country, a sort of a mash-up of how the Americans do it, where you paid a market rent up to a certain level, and then you paid a turnover top-up.
So a turnover top-up?
Basically, if you did very well, you paid the landlord some extra money on top.
Okay.
And it was like, it was the old 80-20 rule.
Okay, all right,
In America, it's all on turnover.
Yeah.
So the more you do, the more you pay the landlord.
It is all on turnover.
And the more successful the scheme, and they're very marketing-led.
Yes.
But it works both ways. If you're not successful, they'll kick you out and put somebody else in who is. So their whole point there is to make money.
Yes.
But they work it on the basis that they make money
with
the retailers.
There's more of a joint venture aspect to it, isn't it?
And we've never grasped that over here.
Yeah.
For one real big reason is because the property market is driven by the investment market.
Yeah.
And the investment market likes certainty.
Mm-hmm.
They like 5-yearly upwards only rent reviews, long leases. And that's how the investment market works.
We've got a lot less land as well, haven't we?
Well, land is a finite amount. It doesn't grow, it doesn't contract, it just is.
Mm-hmm. That's a profound statement.
It's very true, though.
That's why people listen to the podcast.
Indeed.
Land is a finite amount. Doesn't expand, doesn't contract, it just is.
Yeah.
Alan Rawlins, 2017.
I wish I could take claim for that.
All right.
Unfortunately, it's been said for a long time.
Well, you can on the podcast, you can take claim for it. So should people buy their own property, Alan, or should they rent it?
Are you a property investor or are you a retailer or a businessman?
Okay, so the answer to that would be I am a businessman.
Businessman. Okay. If you're going to buy a freehold of a property, you might have to pay, for example, a retail premises. If the rent is, I used the example I mentioned before, $50,000 a year.
Yeah.
That might cost you more multiples of that £50,000 to buy it.
Yes.
Than it would do to rent it.
Yeah.
And that all comes off your bottom line.
Yes.
Because property has to be allocated in your account.
Yes, on the balance sheet. Yeah, it does.
So
yeah.
If you buy a freehold, yeah. Yes, you can write it off.
Unless, of course, yeah. Although, because again, a lot of people have got buy the property. The business owner buys the property in their own name or in their SIP, in their pension.
Now that's
fund.
A different thing. That's a different thing.
Okay.
Which say as a business on its own. Your property liability shows on your balance sheet.
Yes.
Now, if you buy it in your SIP,
yes.
Or as
it
a
doesn't.
Separate, there in effect you are your own landlord.
Yes.
So you're having
which is,
to buy the property for argument's sake at £1 million.
Yeah.
You rent it yourself at £50,000 a year.
Yes.
So you own an asset
yes.
of that value.
That's right.
And your business pays you
yes.
the rent.
Yes.
But you would still have to manage that. So if you've got a 10-year lease to yourself or a 20-year lease to yourself with reviews every 3 years, or you still have to go through the review process.
Yes.
So you have to have it properly valued.
So
your
right.
SIP
yeah.
accepts that figure.
Yes.
So it's not as straightforward as it might
seem. And the other thing, important point to make here as well, and this is, you're talking to someone who has got massively stung by this, is that the commercial property prices do not necessarily, in fact, rarely reflect house prices.
Oh no.
And
it's demand. It's supply and demand.
Yeah, so I when I was ready to move out of my back bedroom, this is going back, goodness me, 12-13 years ago now, and I took the decision to buy our first office. And so this would have been in goodness me, 2005 it would have been. And if you look at a graph of Midlands property prices, what you'll find is around about February 2005 was about the peak.
Yeah, I was going to say it's pre 2008. So
yeah,
you were buying at the top of the market.
Yeah, yeah. So I bought this property and divided it. Well, I bought two. We had two different units in the same place that were next door to each other. And one of them in particular. That I was the three-story building where EC started and grew in, and it was about 3,500 square feet, and I paid when I bought it. I paid £785,000 for that property. Okay, now don't look at me like that. And no one can see how you're looking at me, but this is important. I do want to share this so people understand. So, long story, I did all the things you just talked about. I did. I bought it. I bought the property. It wasn't in my SIP as it happened. Sue and I owned it. We rented it to the company. The company paid us a rent. And then EC's outgrown the whole building, and I want new premises. So we go and look at some new premises. And I said, well, I'll probably sell this. I'm not a commercial property investor. You know, really, I've had this property. We had it for over 10 years. So I'm thinking, well, you know, it'd be interesting to see what this is. Maybe it might be worth as much as £1 million now. And so I got the value around. And so I'm looking to sell this particular unit. And so he came around, I did a little round, took some pictures. And I said, what do you think we should market it at? He said, it's in good condition, because I'd replaced all the windows, I'd put air conditioning in it. He said, it's in good condition. He said, we'd probably market it about £350. You know, but anything offers over 300 would be good. Well, I nearly fell off my chair.
Yeah.
I said, but I paid £800,000 for this. And because he looked at me, he gave me a little bit of sympathetic look. and I'm thinking, Christ, how? I thought it was a really smart thing. I thought I was buying property. Mm. You know, the company's funding the rent of it. That's how I'm going to appreciate all the capital. And it was actually, it had more than halved in value over 10 years. Or not even a short period. I'd had it for over 10 years at this point. And I was somewhat crestfallen, really, and then realised that this was actually true, what was being told. Because my first bit was to just not believe him. But a bit of research told me that this is actually true, and that, as you say, I bought my offices at the peak. Now, what I've managed to do, partly because it's not, it wasn't in a SIP, which was actually very fortunate for me. So I then did a bit of work, and we managed to convert the three-story office into five apartments, and I've managed to convert the apartments and sell them all. And actually, I've managed to get, the sale price of the five apartments has been about £900,000. Obviously, we had to spend a bit of money to do the conversions, but long and so I have saved
a disaster.
That's exactly what I've done. I haven't made any money, but I have saved it.
What you've done, lot of people have done.
Yeah.
The commercial property market is split in different sectors, so office, industrial, retail, supermarkets, all these things. All these have different demands
At different times and different parts of the cycle.
Market demands as well. I mean, even large food stores, they've peaked now.
Yes.
And even though a few years ago Tesco's mothballed a few and they've closed a few, which you never thought you'd have heard of. But the offices, an interesting, you mentioned about offices. At a certain point in time, you couldn't get office space for love nor money. And the rental prices went through the roof, freehold prices went up because there wasn't just the space and people wanted more.
Yeah.
That was in probably the mid-2000s. Come the recession, office space became 10 a penny. Prices dropped, freehold prices dropped because nobody wanted to buy them. They were putting their money to safer bets.
Yeah.
And there wasn't really a safe bet, so it came out of a lot of property and property prices went down.
Yeah.
It went into commodities, so hence the gold price went through. But what has happened now is that you'll find with what they brought in was permitted development rights.
Yes.
Which enabled you to convert from offices into residential.
Yes.
And what's been happening, people have been snapping up, generally at auction, small office buildings.
Yes.
Distressed office buildings in some risk and some situations, which are either empty or nearing empty. The leases are coming up for expiry, on the view of converting them into residential.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
These ones that are just in town centres, just off high streets, things like that.
Yeah.
But it's having an adverse effect now on small businesses, because once upon a time you could go and get a small office above a shop or in a small office building, things like that. You can't do that now.
Yeah.
Your options are really to share space with a bigger business.
Yes.
Or take a service department from somebody like Regis or that sort of thing. So it has had an adverse effect on small business trying to find space, which is, you know, the demand is there, but the supply is not there. So when things become available, the prices are high.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it is a supply and demand driven business.
And interestingly, I mean, the rental per square foot, I mean, the offices that we're now in, which are nearly 8,000 square feet, I'm paying the same rent as I was paying, albeit to myself, but it was a market rent when I set it, as I was paying for my 3,500 square foot. So I have benefited
market
on that
rents,
side.
For offices as well, a lot of things come down to parking spaces, accessibility, near to the main roads, near to town centres, parking, what the travel situation is like in the mornings and the evenings, because it all has an impact.
Mm.
Likewise, the impact on market rent for retail premises is where is it in relation to the big retailers
like Marks and Spencer's and
Tesco's and
the destination shops.
Those sort of things. I mean, the large shopping centres all work in slightly different ways, but most of them will have one or two, or these days three, anchor stores.
Yes.
And by an anchor store, I mean like a department store or a food store or something
Yeah.
And all the other stores co-locate with them.
Yes.
But this has a knock-on effect with some town centres that have been decimated by the recession, where forward-thinking councillors are thinking, well, okay, we'll stick a department store. We want a department store. They want to come here, but we haven't got the space for them.
Yeah.
We can find out what they want, and we'll provide it to them. Because if they come to our town, others will follow.
That's right, yeah.
And you can see that with landlords have been doing this with some in-town shopping centres, with people like TK Maxx, where TK Maxx will take a certain size of store in a location at a rent.
Well,
and if
think,
you can provide that, they'll come. If you can't, they won't. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, and I'm sure that I do look at in Solihull, obviously our hometown, not yours but mine. You know, we've got the Touchwood Centre, which was a big council redevelopment kind of 15 years ago now.
Yeah. Same people who built Blue Water.
Yes,
you know,
but John Lewis there.
Yep.
And I mean, tremendously progressive planners in truth, because, you know, Solihull is a very vibrant town centre with a very vibrant high street. It's a very large catchment area now from all over the Midlands.
Yep.
People come into Solihull, and the bond, the core, at the core of that is John Lewis. No question about that at all. So I understand exactly.
The problem with the Touchwood Centre there in Solihull, though, is it's been a victim of its own success. That the rents there are now disproportionately too high for retailers who want to be in the town, but they can't afford to go into the scheme. Because it was so good, so well taken up.
Yeah.
And some of the other big, more modern schemes, there's one on the quayside down in Southampton, where
yes, I know that one, yeah.
That scheme, again, it's anchored by a big department store, and the initial rents in the people taking the units was attainable, but then new people came in and paid higher and higher and higher rents. And now they've got vacant space and they're having to reconfigure it because people can't afford.
Yeah.
And all landlord wants to do, it comes back to, is maintain their rental value.
Yeah, and it's interesting, and because as business owners, as what we are, we're not property experts. It's like any other aspect of life, really. When you peel away the layers, there's always a lot more to this.
Yes.
And that's really, this was really, and I think we've accomplished it, and I appreciate your help, and you've done a good job today. I think explaining some of the many different kind of variants and elements that need to be considered when, as business owners, we're looking at going into some form of property.
And as we remember with business owners, your business is what you do, and you have, as I said, you've got staff, and property is just another means of delivering your business.
Yeah, I get that.
But if it's dealt well, and you dealt with it properly, it's an asset of the business.
Yes.
But if it's not, it can easily become a liability. And that's what a lot of people come unstuck with.
Is there anything we haven't covered that we ought to?
We've scratched the surface.
Yeah, okay.
It is a very big area. I mean, I've been in property and commercial market for 20 years, and I'm still learning.
Yeah.
And stuff changes all the time because of the way the law works.
If anyone wants to talk to you about property, would you be happy to talk to them?
Absolutely.
How can they get in touch with you, Alan?
My business is Kaleidoscope Property Consulting.
Kaleidoscope Property
Consulting. It's a mouthful, I know.
Okay. Are you on the EC Marketplace?
Am I on the EC Marketplace?
Yes, the answer to that is yes.
I am on the EC Marketplace.
You are on the EC Marketplace.
But yes, I am on the EC
Marketplace. So people can find you on the hub, Kaleidoscope.
I'm based in Hertfordshire, but I do cover most of the country in various. I've got clients dotted all over the place. But by all means, if you've got a property inquiry or you're not sure about something or you want me to, get involved on your behalf for something, whether you're looking for it or you want to get out somewhere, or any of the things we discussed, give me a call.
And you're in the EC Facebook group as well, quite regularly, so people can contact you through there.
Yeah,
I'm. Can I give you a phone number out?
Yeah, I remember the phone, but very rarely do I use it. It's all on the emails.
Oh, well.
It's all in, but the phone number is 020-3727-5024.
You better say that one more time.
Yeah, 020-3727-5024.
Okay. Alan Rawlins, Kaleidoscope. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks very much,
Nigel. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye now.
You've been listening to the podcast from the Entrepreneur's Circle, featuring Nigel Bottrell. The podcast is copyright Entrepreneur's Circle 2015.